Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. It's another Monday evening. And so, guess what? Edwin is with me once again. Hi, Edwin, how are you going?
I'm doing fine, Martin. I still want to see those numbers. Show me the numbers. That's the beginning of our segment. Until the mainstream media come clean, I want to see the numbers.
Show me the numbers, indeed. And, you know, there's a lot of partial numbers around there and a lot of people trying to make extrapolations. You know, in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, there's this wonderful line where they say they try to extrapolate the universe from a fairy cake, right? I think that's a little bit of an analogy of what we're seeing at the moment, right? Because, the numbers are actually telling you one thing, but people are extrapolating something completely different.
Oh, look, they are, and this is the whole thing. Like we said last week, you show me the money, I'll show you the numbers, and there's a meeting point somewhere along the way, and today's numbers are brought to you by Channel 9 or the Nine Network. It also owns, I believe, they own 60% share of Domain. Oh, I don't know. That's what Dusty tells me anyway. Cheeky thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've got to ask who is actually paying for the for the numbers, right? And very importantly, what commercials, you know. So if you think about it, if you're in the real estate sector, then obviously you want transactions, right? How do you get transactions? You try and convince people to buy property. How do you convince people to buy property? Well, of course, what you do is you actually spruik to high heaven and try and encourage people that this is now a critical point. You know, if you don't buy now, you're never going to buy. So that's the logic, right? But unfortunately, reality and the logic doesn't necessarily always hang together very well when you start looking in detail. And that's what we do. You know, you've got to look at the numbers. You've got to go granular. You've got to really understand what's going on because the story is quite different.
That's right. And also, it works the same for selling, right? We know that the industry is in a lot of pain. So we know all those that are calling for listings, first and foremost are going to be Domain and REA, because their revenue is probably cut down from about $2.4 billion per annum to under $2 billion, and they've got to account to the shareholders. How do they make money? They make money by listings coming on market, and by the vendor paid advertising that are being paid for by those that want to sell. So with low selling numbers across most of the capital cities of Australia, well, the real estate industry is a lot of pain. And who are the lackeys that go out there and get listings of the real estate agents, right? To keep on feeding the Domain and the REA machine. And unfortunately, we've been used and abused, and hence the reason why I keep on saying, Martin, watch this space, because it's only a matter of time before the big beasts that we created. When I say we, the industry, the stakeholders in the industry, the real estate agents, we created since late 90s till now. We've just been feeding these big machines now that are going to basically eat the industry's lunch. And my prediction is out there that it'll be more or less like a Purple Bricks 2.0, because it's something that the prize is on that marketing budget of that we spend, or we're in the good times we were spending close to 15-point-something $15 billion annually across Australia, which is a hell of a lot of money. So when you compare that to what they're currently making or not making, well, yeah, the grass is greener on the other side. And my money's still on the main portals, reaching out and eating our lunch. But here we are. There's we're not hearing in the mainstream. We're not hearing from Domain. We're not hearing in the REA articles. We're not really hearing in the mainstream how many people are leaving the industry, because that's a no-no. We want to hear the fact that you need to list your property on market, regardless of the fact whether or not you've got somewhere to go after you sell. regardless of the fact that you may not have anywhere to go, I should say, or regardless of the fact that you can't even get a rental in the area where you want to basically stay and continue your residence for one reason or another. So these are the things. So we're not told those stories, but they are starting to push that. Call it fear mongering, call it false flags, call it whatever you want to call it. I just go back to the basics, and that's just the listings on market, numbers. People that are going are actually pursuing the auction campaigns, and at the end of the day, regardless of what the mainstream media say, which we'll talk a little bit more later on as well, is the banks aren't letting go of the properties for below what the reserves are and what the market is dictating at the moment, Martin.
Very good point. And of course, this article here from Nine News in Perth, you mentioned at Nine earlier on, all about repossessions. Again, it's part of that same agenda, isn't it? Trying to get properties on the market. And if you look at the properties in possession, they're still very low. If you look at it compared even 5 years ago, it's still pretty low. And interestingly, as we'll see later, a lot of the ones that are actually being shifted at the moment are more to do with the failure in the commercial sector over COVID rather than what's happened since interest rates have risen. So there's a big lag between people actually up stumping and what's going on at the moment. So in a way, focusing in on these repossessions and what have you is really missing the point, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it is. If anything, if you look at all the chatter, well, if you look at the chatter on Twitter and a lot and across other platforms, and you start picking out all the ones that the chatterers that get all excited about and the Twitter artsy that get all excited about the mortgagee in possession auctions, go back and find out what they got sold for. Go back and find out about the fact that in most cases, early this year and late last year, the mortgagee in possession properties, they got passed in, and because they didn't achieve the desired outcome, and the desired outcome was pretty much where the rest of the area was faring at the time, and in some cases, a couple of the ones that I attended and I was reporting on Twitter, they achieved even more than 5, 10, 7% more than the reserve on the day, because I was talking to the real estate agents, and you really and because the competition is on. So I dare say, and I'm going to go out on a limb, Martin, and say that the any mortgage in possession at the moment, what it's doing is really creating a favorable outcome both for the bank and the poor bastard that has just lost their lost the property to the bank, and after the lawyers get a hold of the money that it brings in on the day of auction. But I dare say they're going to walk away with something, whereas historically or in the past, a decade or so ago, even longer, there was nothing left over for the person that the property was repossessed from. But nowadays, currently, at least over the last 12 months of looking into mortgagee in possessions and auctions that have gone through mortgagee in possession, they've achieved fantastic results. And in one or two cases, they've even broken the records for that type of property in the suburb.
Well, that's right. We mentioned this last week, right? Sydney records massive spike in home auction numbers, right? So they're pushing the story. Now, hang on a moment. Those home auction numbers really hardly compare with last year, particularly high. And as you say, where there's particular examples of a property, going above asking, well, that's past, I guess, two questions. Partly, well, was it put it in the market at the right point, firstly, and secondly, what was the demand that drove it? But again, those get stressed to bilio, so we don't really get a very, very accurate story of precisely the what's really going on. But you've got to ask the question, who's paying?
Yeah, look, exactly, Martin. And this is where we've got to be careful to where the so-called mortgagee sales are, and as you said, who's buying them, and more to the point, who's paying for these articles, because it's and these stories. So look, what I did today, right? And as I put up on that tweet, I said, yeah, basically show me the numbers. You know, I've spent a couple of hours on going through the Supreme Court cases from January this year till August, the ones that have been determined. And what I found there across the board was, I mean, some exciting stuff. There's a matter there between with there's even a matter there between Iconic Constructions and Blacktown Council. I thought that was rather interesting. I actually spent a bit of time, too much time reading that case. But yeah, there's developments, there developers. There's a couple of banks. Matters with banks, so I had a closer look at those. One of them was, some bloke claiming, had the bank in the court and has gone all the way to the Supreme Court over different legal issues, and I thought it was interesting that this case was started being heard in 2017. Hold on, let me just go back there. That Blacktown was the developer in 2017. Where are we? This was a yeah. There were some private funding companies with second and third mortgage holders over developments. That was the interesting one that I wanted to share tonight is with regards to. Where are we? Oh, here we go. It was Halen the CBA, and when you started reading it, that I thought, gee, this is going to be interesting. This is probably a mortgagee in possession. I mean, apart from that, it was the some of the issues claimed in this case was treasonous actions by the CBA, unlawful sale of CBA. That was sanctioned by Bob Hawke back in the day when he was acting, and so bottom line is, Martin, in a long, long-winded way of telling our followers and what I read was a lot of the litigation on the cases that have been determined by the Supreme Court. Obviously, where that is where banks, that is where mortgage holders, that is where going basically, get the power to take possession over the property or properties. Most of it is to do with developments. A lot of it's got to do with owners' corporations suing an owner for not paying the strata levies and and special levies and so forth, and the determination on that. So, but there was nothing that struck me to say that it's your average mum and dad, in a lot of strife where the bank's going to take over the property and put the family on the street. But let me say this also, Martin, is look, you and I understand the fact that there's a lot of mortgage stress. We know that. We know there's a lot of mortgage stress. People are choosing, in a lot of cases, not, to do without meals on a daily basis, not on a weekly basis. And they're putting the young families or themselves through a lot of pain and a lot of stress in order to hold on and to pay the pay down the mortgages or pay the bank, and to have some sort of a life and have a roof over their heads. We know that. I get that, but we're not seeing the repercussions of that yet. And what we are seeing, and I think what the mainstream media convoluted, and when they talk about residential properties, and we see residential properties being advertised on Domain or real estate portals for mortgagee in possession, it's really properties that are got some sort of commercial cross-collateralization with commercial loans with developers, and at the end of the day, it's the residential holdings, but under commercial loans and developments and anything else but families. I can't imagine the CEOs, the CFOs of the banking organizations, sitting back in with a shandy or whatever they or a brandy at night, sitting back smiling and waiting and hoping that they're the first ones the first ones to take a family through the Supreme Court and be front page news. I don't believe that's that to be the case. And they'll do whatever it takes to bend over backwards to keep them in the home. That's my personal opinion, because but I am not seeing other reporters and the Twitterati are posting out on the social media platforms.
No, and it's worth just underscoring. You know, once a bank goes through all its processes and decides that it is going to foreclose, it can take years for that process to work through. And as I said earlier on, a lot of the stuff that's coming through at the moment relates to pre-COVID and COVID, where effectively commercial businesses with mortgages and with security that was actually linked on the family home got into difficulty. They're the ones at the moment that are being ground through. And again, I was talking to an insolvency practitioner quite recently, and they said, look, it can take 3 years, 4 years, 5 years to get this coming through. So the idea that you're going to see the banks foreclosing on mortgage holders that are just ordinary households at the moment, thanks to the interest rate rises, they're only a year old, is fanciful. Now, of course, that doesn't mean that there won't be some people who've actually got a decision that they can make themselves, because they actually, looking at their cash flow, are thinking, gee, this is going to get tough. But then you ask the other very, very important question, which we have to come back to, yes, but where are you going to live? Because, of course, the option of moving to rental accommodation is pretty tough at the moment. And that means that there aren't many other options for people who actually get into this sort of bind. And so the bottom line is, many people will do their damnedest to hold on to their property and cut out other expenditures, and as you say, go without meals, go without medical treatment. I'm seeing that in my surveys at the moment, just to keep the mortgage or the rent being paid. And I think this is something that's really, really important for people to understand, right? This is not something that's going to blow up in the next few weeks. This is going to take a long, long time to run through. Interest rates are going to stay high, though, of course, into 2024 and probably in 2025. And that means that ultimately, this may grind people down to the point where effectively they've got no choice. But in the meantime, the banks will do absolutely everything they can, extend the length of the mortgage, move on to interest only, pull out equity. I'm seeing quite a lot of equity being pulled out at the moment, even at the moment. So all of those things are in play. And again, this is not the story that the mainstream media are actually propagating at all. And therefore, it's quite easy to get deceived.
It is, and this is why. We're talking about it tonight. Also, it's because some of the stuff that went on over the weekend, and this is this deception again. Look, everybody's got their own agenda, right? You can. I don't think you've earned the title of saint, or I've earned the title of saint just yet. I'm not saying we're not going to get there, Martin, but I'm just saying right at the moment we've all got our own agenda. But unfortunately, it's the agendas that get the greatest voice in the mainstream are the ones that, when you look at it a little bit closer as to why and their need, and unfortunately they've got the closest ties with the mainstream, and that's the stories that will sell and that will get a lot of traction across the board. So where I'm coming from in this is the fact that Tom, good old Tom Panos, he put out a tweet over the weekend, and he created a bit of banter, and he said, "Don't let the banks take control." I agree with him wholeheartedly on that. The house I auctioned this week for a poor family that was repossessed. Plan ahead and do everything you can do to try and hold it. But if you can't sell it yourself. Yeah, and obviously that's leading on to other things. Look, a lot of what he's saying is true, but you look at the motivation behind it, and then you look at the then you look at I quickly went through the domain portals, and I did a screenshot of what was being listed by with a with keywords of mortgagee and repossession, under offer or not, on the day, and I found zero zero properties. So, I mean, that to me, is already starting to contradict a lot of what the reports that we got from Nine and everybody else that we've been hearing over the weekend. Now, going back to what we said, so then I thought, you know what? What I'll do is I'll shoot Tom a text message, and just to get a little bit more info, because obviously it's creating a bit of banter on the social media platforms. I said, "Hey Tom, hope you're doing well. Saw your tweet, read the mortgagee sale slash auction. Did you help the bank achieve a better sale price than the reserve? And are you able to disclose the suburb? Again, hope you're doing well. Next time you're in the Western suburb, let me buy you lunch." Blah blah blah. Right. So he responded and said, "Can't disclose. Can't disclose. It actually didn't sell, but he did say I cut that thing. He did say it's in the Penrith region. But the question is, Martin, why didn't it sell? Why didn't it sell? Everybody on Twitter and everybody on Facebook and everybody on a lot of the other social media platforms were telling the rest of the world that a mortgagee sale, a repossessed sale must sell. But why didn't it sell? Why didn't the ones in the over the previous 6 months and the previous 12 months that we've tracked over Twitter now, why didn't they sell? Because the thoughts and the philosophy and the fear that a lot of people are putting in at the moment, a lot of these people are putting in the main are erroneous. And look, as much as we all hate the banks to an extent, but they are trying to act in they have to act in the best interest of the clients at the end of the day, or the party, because they don't want to be sued and they don't want to be seen as doing the wrong thing. So what I've sent you is an just a snapshot of an abstract of a great, for the followers, if you want to Google this, you can see for yourself. And the abstract spells out more or less what banks have to do when they take possession of a property, and how they must act. Because at the moment, no bank wants to be the first bank, the banking institution, on the front page of the Sydney Morning Herald or the AFR, and with a family with holding suitcases on the street. They don't want to be that. They certainly don't want to that kind of publicity, and because it'll be detrimental to them and their shareholders, in my opinion. So this is where we've just got to be careful what we read, because again, as we're going to look further, the numbers are not reflecting what a lot of these people may be saying off the cuff for whatever agenda they have. We know what the mainstream media's agenda is. We know what who they support, what they own. Nine owns 60% of Domain. Then there's REA stories, which are in bed with Ray White. And the story keeps on unfolding. And show me the money, and I'll show you the numbers.
Absolutely. And what's quite fascinating here, because you said you went through the listings to see whether there was actually possession, mortgagee in possession, for sale or whatever. So you went a bit further, right? And you actually spoken to a liquidator and said, "Well, has the rules changed?" Because
Exactly.
we're not seeing it. So it's quite fascinating. And then when you actually look at the conversation about that, right? Have the regs changed reselling a property that's repossessed?
Yeah, look, I've dealt over the years with liquidators, and have sold downsold developments, finished and uncompleted developments for liquidators, and this particular chap that I he was a partner in a company, a big company, Grant Thornton, in the city, and I still keep tabs with him. And I said, "Hey, mate, quick question for you: have the regs changed reselling a property that is repossessed by the bank? As in, do liquidators acting for the for the what do you say on our agent for the listings, or agents marketing the property as mortgagee sale or the like. Any responded? I mean, this guy, he knows his shit, right? He's really up there in knowledge about banking regulations, liquidations, the whole thing. And he says no changes, should disclose if mortgagee in possession, or no changes, or receivership sale as allows market to adjust, and no property must be sold. Also must state in the sale of contract, which is a given, we know that. Then I'll, because I had a bit of a discussion with a couple of other agents this morning about it, and this is something that Tarek brought up in a response to one of the tweets that I put up, and then I said, I thought so, but I have a dispute with an agent as he's saying, no, don't have to. Because it's not a material fact. And it's true. It's not a material fact. It doesn't say in our regulations that it's that we must disclose it in the marketing, as because it is really not not a material fact. Although the contract of sale will have the mortgage holder on title and it'll be displayed on the front page anyway. So regardless of that fact, so going back to anything that's on domain and anything that's on real estate, if it was really up to the real estate agent, well, in most cases, they wouldn't. That in most cases, not now. In most cases, when there's a lot of listings, you don't want to market that, or you sort of try to get. You don't want to. You don't want to create a wrong sense of desperation. But right now, that has a counter effect, a good effect, because you get more people lobbing up to the auction thinking they're going to get a bargain, and they it's it creates a lot more emotion. It's so it's the reverse of what a lot of people think it's happening. So then I wrote back and I said, look, thought so, but I have a dispute with an agent as he's saying no, don't have to disclose because it's not a material fact, which is true. But I did say to him that maybe the case for our regulations, but the liquidator is under other regulatory obligations as well. And he responded by saying, agree with you. So because they are under, they run under different acts. They have different duties of care to perform, because they've still got a duty to the court as well. And look, that's from the, you could say that's from the horse's mouth, right? So it's nothing that I've come up with, nothing that I've made up. This is what it is. So with that information, our viewers and our followers should be able to do a word search, on domain and on real estate, to see what really comes up, and then so you can't say that the mainstream can't say, oh yeah, but agents aren't disclosing that on the on domain and on the marketing. No, because they will be instructed, according to this liquidator, according to my mate here, that they will be instructed to disclose it on the marketing campaign, because they want to be they want to be as transparent as possible and let the market adjust. And let the market know that the property also they want to achieve a sale as well, because they don't want to hold on to the property for too long, because obviously every day, every action, has a price attached to it, and that comes off the bottom line, at the end of the sale.
Absolutely. I think it's a very important discussion, and liquidators have specific obligations. The degree of disclosure, of course, is determined by the circumstance. But you've got to understand that the rest of it's, agents marketing campaigns and trying to get more people to come through. That's what it's about, right? And so, in some cases, claiming that there is actually, some problem, and that implies a forced sale, that's going to potentially bring more people through the door.
Yeah, well, look, you look at some of the stuff that was being picked up by Parapower over in Brisbane. and he was sharing last year. And then I just got on the phone and called the agents. I said, "Hey, how desperate are these desperate, so-called desperate sellers of yours? I'm a buyer's agent, and I just want a bit of background." Sort of more or less, pretended that I had clients that were looking into those areas of Brisbane that these desperate sellers were saying. And when they gave me the numbers and they gave me the guides and they told me the background, it was totally contrary to the marketing campaign at all. But it creates emotion, right? Sales are driven by a lot of emotion. And the more people that turn up to these so-called desperation auctions only end up doing the opposite, and that is pushing the prices a lot higher. And everybody thinks that they're going to go out there and grab themselves a bargain. You're too early to the party.
Absolutely right. Well, let's just go and talk about the numbers because it's sort of a logical follow-on. And if we start with Sydney, there has been a little bit of an uplift. So if you look at this week's, we're at 15,762 compared with, if we look at last week, 15,401. So, a slight movement up and it's consistent trend. Listings do seem to be going up slightly. And of course, CoreLogic came out today and made the point that the growth in prices had actually eased in some areas and that listings were continuing to rise. So they're basically saying could be soft in the weeks ahead.
Yeah, look, I, you, the buyers would certainly be hoping for that, and the buyers will be hoping for a lot more, as because in specific suburbs, specific areas where they're looking at they're looking at buying. I said that the spring numbers generally bring out your traditional sellers anyway, and a lot of the people that you and I have been talking about that are going to go to market are your traditional sellers that will wait for the spring, that don't want to sell in winter, because that's just the way it is for them, and that's their beliefs. So you've got the natural uptick of for sale listing numbers in both Sydney and in Melbourne, but how many more are we going to get? And is it going to be? Are we going to be really seeing the July, August, spring that some of the commentators, I haven't seen it because we're still tracking below 2022 numbers, it's really having a counter effect to what they're professing that is that would happen or what they would wish would happen in order to keep the industry afloat. I think it's really having a counter effect. But look, my concern still is now is that people are still asking for a lot more than what the property is worth because they can still see in their areas of where they're selling, they can still see the numbers are very low, and they're really pushing the boundaries with the listing agents. And listing agents have got no choice but to listen to the whims and the whams of the sellers wanting 10, 15, 20% above what the property is really worth, because you know what, they can. And if the agent doesn't take it, if agent one doesn't take it, agent B will take it, or if not agent A or B, agent C will take it, because they need signboards on the street in order to keep the offers going, ticking up, and let's pretend that we've got activity and we're dominating, because that's how you have dominance over your territory. I mean, that's sales training real estate 101. The more signboards you have in your area of influence or in your territory, the more people are going to gravitate towards your offers. So this is why a lot of agents or agencies do very well in certain areas, but the majority are starving. Case in point, there's an offer. There are four offices in the Shire under the one I won't name the brand. There are four offices in the Shire. Across the board, they've got 18 real estate agents and or selling agents, that is, across the four offices, and each one would have a PA attached to them. So you could really say there's 36 selling agents across the board. But the office is the dominant office in those suburbs of the Shire. But Martin, they've only got eight freaking listings. So if they are the dominant agency for those suburbs in the Shire, what the hell is happening with the other 12 offices in each of those suburbs as well? 12, that's close to 60, close to 60 offices across those four suburbs. They're starving. So this is the reality. This is where what people where we're at, but we're not hearing it. In the mainstream, it seems like you and I are the only ones more or less talking about it. From time to time, other commentators pick it up, but they're only social media commentators that pick it up now. Who knows? But that's where we are with the market. So it's not seeing those real upticks that we would like to see, particularly our clients would like to see. But we just got to be careful because there are still opportunities. There are still opportunities there. You just have to keep in search. Notwithstanding the point that we've also raised again, that the mainstream haven't really spoken about, and that is the social media platforms, that are really also across the biggest ones that I've seen. Myself, obviously, is the WeChat chatter platforms where they're selling real estate that aren't listed on Domain and real estate, and also the Vietnamese. I've spoken to a few groups, Indian groups, and I said, "Hey guys, the Vietnamese are doing it. The Chinese community are doing it. Why isn't the Indian community come up with something like a portal like this?" And they just laughed. They don't know why. But we see that there's a lot more than again than a lot of people are aware of. There are a lot more properties available outside of the main portals than what we're seeing. So don't really know what the true numbers are, but look, could be another, you could add another 3 to 5% on those figures. Who knows? But there's certainly a lot of real silent listings out there that, or not so much silent, but outside of Domain and Domain real estate. But we keep to the Domain numbers because that's the that's the benchmark that we've chosen over the last three and a half years that you and I've chosen, and they're consistent, and they show they're showing us what's happening, and nothing's really changed of late to stand out to get all excited about as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and if you look at Melbourne, so on the 31st of July, 22,599 properties. If we go on to look at them for the 7th of August, 22,864. So a slight uptick, but nothing dramatic, nothing to write home about again.
No, but the interesting thing again is the point that we want to make there is that it's almost double the number of Sydney, right? And obviously after the policy changes of last week and the previous weeks, we could have with a hell of a lot more listings on market, and that could really ramp up to the 30,000 by the end of spring. It's just a wait and see, and it depends on how many investors forego and let go of their investments because things are just getting very, very hard. These rental freezes that they're talking about, that's another can of worms that the government's gonna open up. And I they say that Victoria's probably going to be first cab off the rank, but it's just one of those things, Martin. It's the migration, and where will they go to? Where will they go to is this the $64 million question? My money's on New South Wales, my money's on Sydney, and therefore that migration of people that will be cashed up will only keep on absorbing those numbers that come on. So going back to what we were talking about, those numbers across Sydney, I'm still somewhat not fearful, but I hope that we don't get up in we don't get into a Mexican standoff where people's expectations aren't going to be met, and potentially properties could sit on market with asking prices very, very high, and the buyer's not willing to meet that, but sooner than later they'll come off market, and we could end up with a situation where they. We end up with a Mexican standoff. No party wants to meet halfway, because of the other situations as well. When you incorporate the no rentals, when you incorporate very little construction, it's just a wait and see. For us, it's a week by week exercises to see what's happening in the specific areas that we're looking for our clients.
Absolutely. Well, let's just quickly talk about the auction stats. Not really much to say. So this is the one from the 29th of July and the 5th of August. And if you trip over and look at the one for the 12th of August at the moment, it's a pretty similar story, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's all, but yeah, we just share those for the sake of sharing. Nothing exciting. If anything, I think Catherine Cashmore's. I think I saw some tweets of Catherine Cashmore noting the. I can't remember. It was just Melbourne, or could have been Sydney, because I don't follow the auction numbers on the weekend as much as she does. And saying that there's a lot of properties. That are being sold prior to auction and also withdrawn. So and that's where you get that those Mexican standoffs as well, when you end up with a lot more withdrawn because the buyers don't want to meet the vendor's expectations. But then again, it's also expectations that have been fired up or stoked by agents that take on silly listings, right? And whilst the numbers remain low, they can.
Spot on. Yes, well, it's going to be a continuing story, I think. And talking about continuing stories, I think you can also say that about the rentals as well.
Yeah, the rentals are actually a lot lower this week, Martin, than last week, by a considerable amount of properties in retrospect. But like we said last week, there's a lot of activity will happen as the season starts warming up. Things, across the board, running a rent book, a rent roll for 18 years or so, you get to know the seasons where you get a lot of activity and you get less activity across the rental sphere. And winter seems to sort of everybody seems to go into hibernation. And then when things start warming up, there's a lot of activity. But in this case, the activity is basically snapping up those properties that are on the market. But let's not forget, also, we still really haven't felt the full force of the current government's immigration policy, right? And so, it's it, from it's a it, it's a big drop. It's a noticeable drop. I would not be surprised if the mainstream don't pick up on what's happened from last month to this month in the in relation to rental numbers really taking a bit of a hit.
And look, comparing it with last year, because this is the 1st of August 2022, where we had 11,344. So, it gives you a bit of a context as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, we're tracking a lot. We're tracking less than what we're tracking, almost similar weeks to last year. It's scary. It's scary because last year we didn't have as much demand as what we have now, and nor did in the new migrants didn't start piling in until the and the students didn't start piling in until the first quarter of this year.
Yeah, good point.
So.
Now, let's just briefly touch on the WeChat chats because, well, there's a little bit of a disturbing theme coming through, isn't there?
There is. We'll keep it brief. We won't say too much because it's basically the theme is war. There's some There's a lot happened last night. We in the around China I mean they're calling all sorts of things, and and there's a bit of tension at the moment between mainland China and America, and the a carrier will say that they're alleging was attacked by drones deployed from U.S. ships. So that's what they're all talking about. So there's not much to talk about other than that's a the chatter. It's something that we could just leave it there because
Yeah,
it's really.
absolutely. Well, we'll see whether the thematics come back to property or not in coming weeks, right? Which takes us then to the tip of the week, which is a very important observation based on your earlier analysis.
Look, but people have really got to understand that just because it's a mortgagee sale, they're not going to pick up a bargain. Not at this point in time. Not when the listing numbers are at this low. If anything, we've seen the evidence is there. I can point to the evidence. Over the last six going back 12 months, that most of the properties are being sold under mortgagee. So they've achieved higher prices than the reserve, and they've achieved great results. So just because it says mortgagee, mortgagee sale, mortgagee in possession, at the moment, it's not. Don't think that the banks are just going to let it go because you've raised your hand and you want to pay $250,000 less than what the valuers put on the valuation report of $1 million, and you think you're going to walk away with it at 750. You can't think that way. You got to be prepared to compete, and you're not the only one. You'll find that you have a lot more competitors there as well. It is what it is in the meantime because of all the other numbers. As I say, show me the numbers, and I'll get a very good idea as to what the outcomes are going to be, and we'll be closer to the truth there as to what people have this illusion that they're going to get. And if you follow the mainstream media's narrative at the moment, that there's been double the amount of potentially we're going to end up with double the amount of applications to the Supreme Court to hear matters of repossessions. Well, that may be so, but things aren't going to be determined for another 2 to 3 years. This is the nature of that beast, and that is that it's a sloth, and he walks very, very slowly. Justice is slow to walk in our country at the moment. Some may call it justice, others may call it injustice, but it's slow. The legal proceedings are very slow to walk. And then finally, my point of view, and that is from mortgage stress to mortgage delinquency, maybe 90 days, but from mortgage delinquency to mortgagee in possession, you could tack on at best case scenario another 3 years.
Well, in fact, I'm discussing mortgage stress tomorrow evening in my live show. I'll go through some postcode data and things. But the key point to make there, Edwin, is that households can be in mortgage stress for years. So
That's right.
it's not a sudden trigger, right? It's a cash flow deficit. What it means is that they continue to milk their savings if they've got savings, put more on credit cards, hunker down. They can actually maintain that for quite some time. But obviously, if the drain on the resources continues, there is a breaking point at some point. And the breaking point is catalyzed by higher interest rates for those on variable rates and the fixed rate cliff, which is happening at the moment. But it can take 2 to 3 years for mortgage stress to move towards delinquency. And then you've got another 2 or 3 years for that to work through, if in fact the bank actually decides ultimately that this is actually one that they're going to take. A final point to make is the banks don't want bad publicity around foreclosures and delinquencies and all of those things. So they're going to tend to want to do a lot of things to try and actually say, no, nothing to see here, you know, move on. And they'll be able to redefine, you know, bad loans and, you know, re-extend and all those, extend and pretend, just like they did through COVID. That's happening at the moment. So the thought that there is going to be a sudden, you know, rush of properties coming on the market in the next 2 or 3 months, for sales, mortgagee in possession, that is just a false narrative. It ain't going to happen.
No, and you don't have to look at it also, look at it from the point, let's look at it from another point of view, right? So if the rentals were a lot higher, if the rentals were double, if we were, you know, even up to, let's say, 15,000, this is Sydney, this is across Sydney, and let's say 50-50 split between houses and apartments, if we're around 15,000, people would make the decision of just under mortgage, the mortgage stress scenario, they'll say, you know what, yeah, stuff it, I'm just gonna you know, sell, get out of here, and go and rent. But they've got no choice, right? Now, but if there were 15,000 rentals available, you would also say that there was a lot of choice, so the market wouldn't be as hot either from the sales point of view, because again, you've got that, you've got people would be making that leap from ownership ledger to the rental ledger, and therefore there'll be more properties on the market for sale. But whilst there aren't properties for rent, yeah, it's very hard to make the decision right now. People are finding it very difficult to go back to the call it the COVID mentality, and that is go regional and work from home. Not when also you've got the main corporations and businesses having a huge push to push them back to commute into the office. I mean, there's the huge drive to move back into the city. The big corporations, the big wigs, the banks, you know, pushing their employees to go back to the big offices, in a lot of other major corporations as well. Why? Because there's also a government pressure on these organizations to bring their employees back into the CBD, because otherwise the CBD starves. I mean, when you start talking about low volumes of traffic going through the, you know, central, you know, the stations in the city for people that are commuting to go to work. I mean, you only have to get off at a town hall, for example. You get off a town hall and you think, shit, I forgot my lunch. I better pick up a quiche, so as I can have a quiche or a warm up a pie at lunchtime. When you've got very low traffic flow, and obviously things are going to get more expensive because the convenience store owners have got to pay the rent and everything. So guess what? You've also got inflationary pressures there, and the quiche they used to be able to buy for $4.50, all of a sudden you're forking out $9 for something half the size, because that's the way it is, because they're not getting the traffic, they're not getting the business through, and hence the government's push, pressure, I would imagine, on a lot of these organizations. Hey, get your employees back into the city, because the city day life as well as nightlife and the retail hospitality industry is just absolutely going through the proverbial shithole.
Well, that's right. It's interesting that some firms are now starting to impose on their employees an obligation to be back in the office. I mean, for example, in the US, I think Zoom has said if you're a Zoom employee and you're actually under 50 miles from the Zoom office, you need to be there at least, you know, sometimes. In London, it's the same thing. They're starting to actually turn the wick up to get people back into CBDs. It's true, I think, in Sydney and Melbourne and other CBDs too. And I guess the question for me, Edwin, is to what extent this is a pendulum swinging back, or will it actually ultimately be coming up against two factors. One is that people have actually got used to working remotely rather than actually working in the office. And then secondly, the costs of actually being able to go into the office, whether it's on the train or whether you're driving, because of inflation, is going to be quite a lot higher. So that's something I think people haven't factored into this thinking. So I'm not convinced that we're going to see the pendulum swing right back, which then puts the pressure on those businesses that are in the CBDs. And that's another reason why I think we're going to see a very uncomfortable period for the next little while, simply because I'm not sure that this is going to be a return to normal. Maybe there's a new normal, which is actually more remote. And by the way, we've still got a lot of Baltimore people who are actually bought further out because they could actually do things digitally. You know, we're making a show between Australia and the UK. Not an issue at all. In fact, the connection is better than it was when I was in the Illawarra. Can you believe that? So it just shows you that, maybe digital isn't that bad after all.
Yeah, look, we could go around and keep on talking as to the reasons why, but look at the numbers and don't be fooled by what the media is saying right now. Be cautious, don't jump in, because the emotion works both ways. Emotion could force people to sell, but the question is where do they go, and then they regret that decision. And what emotion could also make people believe that they're going to go out and get a bargain and jump in prematurely, and more to the point, jump in prematurely, get caught up in the frenzy and thinking they're going to get a bargain and forego all the due diligence. It's just be careful. And if you think you've done the research, research again and again and again.
Good advice, Edwin. I tell you what, we might do a live show. What about Tuesday week, where we can take this conversation a bit further and perhaps get some questions from the audience directly, because I think this is a really, really important conversation.
Oh, look, yeah, look, definitely. I'll also, hopefully by that week, by then, a couple other matters would have been concluded that also come across in the Supreme Court that are currently being heard, where one developer is tied up from reading and from knowing what's happening in that case, I think we're going to have 10 properties that are going to be on the market very soon. So share a little bit more about that as well.
Okay, all right. Well, so folks, if you like, Edwin, we'll do another recorded show next Monday, but Tuesday week, so in other words, 8 days from now, we'll have a live with Edwin as well, and we can get some questions direct from the audience. Edwin, thanks very much for your time once again. Always a very interesting conversation, and I look forward to doing it again very, very soon. Take care.
Thanks, Martin. You take care. You look after yourself.
Cheers. Bye.